Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am covering in this audio, Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 through 13, the fall of man, a key portion of scriptures. Our context is this. In chapter 2, we see God creating man in the Garden of Eden, and then we see God creating the Garden of Eden, and it's described in Genesis 2. And then at the end of Genesis 2, we see the creation of Eve. So everything's created, it's perfect, it's wonderful, and now in chapter 3, man is going to screw it up. We start with verse 1. Now the serpent was the most cunning of all the wild animals that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God really say you can't eat from any tree in the garden?" Now it's a serpent that's tempting Eve. Now it's ironic that man was deceived by an animal when man was supposed to have dominion over the animal. Now, of course, this wasn't a serpent that was actually talking. Serpents don't talk. As the NIV Study Bible said, this was Satan who had clothed himself with a serpent. The devil had taken over the serpent's vocal cords and used them. And this was appropriate since a snake is so crafty and cunning that the devil would do that. Now, it is a question of whether the snake was crafty before the fall or whether he became crafty after the fall. And that's where he gets his reputation from, his state post-fall rather than pre-fall, as John Gill points out. But at any rate, at whatever time it was, the serpent was seen as crafty. Here's a quote from John Gill on how they're crafty: hiding their heads when struck at, rolling themselves up, stopping their ear at the voice of the charmer, putting off their skin, lying in sand of the same color with them, and biting the feet of horses. John Gill's an expert on snakes. He must have seen a lot of them. Now, interestingly here, Adam Clark believes it was not a serpent, but rather an ape. Now, this is an amazing statement, I thought, but he gave a surprisingly convincing argument based on linguistics. He noted that serpents can't talk, but they only hiss. No serpent ever walked upright like apes do, and apes are pretty smart in the animal kingdom. Well, that is an off-the-wall interpretation. I just mentioned it to you for the sake of interest. I don't believe it for a minute. Now, it's clear from the plain and artless style of the Genesis narrative that it was a real serpent that was deceiving Eve here. It doesn't sound like an allegory. There are many allusions to this incident in the New Testament, all of which assume that the serpent was literal. Now, let's look and see how the serpent was cunning in his attempt to tempt Eve. As Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown point out, first, she was alone. Now, that's debatable. Some people say that Adam was with her, but I think we're going to show later on that you can reason your way pretty clearly to that Eve was alone without Adam when she was tempted. The second thing that Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that shows that the snake was cunning in his attempts to deceive is that she didn't go after the leader in the first marriage, or he, the snake, did not go after the leader in the first marriage. He didn't go after Adam, he went after Eve. Eve was in a weaker position. She was not as authoritative as Adam might have been. Third reason that the devil was cunning, the serpent was cunning. Eve had only been in the world a short time, and so she's pretty naive about things in general. And he probably came as an angel of light, according to Jameson, Fawcett, Brown, and Gill. In other words, he fooled Eve into thinking he had come from God. That could be. That's not a literal angel of light, of course, because Eve didn't see an angel of light. She saw a serpent. Now, I'm convinced that the devil did come as a serpent, because if he had come as himself, he would have scared the blazes out of Eve and she never would have listened to anything he said. So he had to hide himself some way. He hid himself in that snake. So the serpent said to the woman, and you note here that Eve showed no surprise that a snake was talking to her. Many people have pointed that out. Here's the reason why she was not surprised. Well, there's two possible reasons. One is she had just been created, so she was innocent like a child. She had no prior experience that would tell her that snakes don't talk. The other option is that all animals spoke before the fall, and this was just another talking animal that she was used to. Well, I don't believe that. It sounds like the Chronicles of Narnia. It's because she was innocent. Now, how was the snake able to talk? Most scholars believe, and I believe also, that the devil took over the snake's vocal cords and made it speak. Now, why would the devil do this? As I said earlier, if he had appeared in his full ugliness, he would have scared Eve to death. He never would have been able to tempt her. How do we know that a serpent should be connected with the devil? It's not explicitly stated in Genesis that the devil is in cahoots with that serpent. But we read in Revelation 12:9 and Revelation 22 the fact that the devil is called a serpent. Revelation 12:9. So the great dragon was thrown out, the ancient serpent who was called the devil and Satan. The ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan. There, the connection is explicit. Revelation 20:2. He, that's God, sees the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil and Satan. That ancient serpent who is the devil and Satan. So, I think it's a reasonable assumption to say that this serpent was the devil speaking to Eve. Now, this shouldn't be surprising. Demons can take over humans' voices and make them speak. I've personally seen that. I saw the demons. In fact, I was having a running conversation with a demon who had possessed this teenage girl when I was working in an orphanage. And he's talking just like they do in those exorcist movies. She's mine! She's mine! No, no, no. Talking like that. Real nasty sounded. And later, the girl, her name was Pam, I remember. She didn't remember the frothing at the mouth, the supernatural power lifting people up in the air, the nasty voices, the throwing bricks at people. She remembered nothing of her demon possession. But she spoke. She spoke with the mouth of a demon. Now, if that's possible for demons to do that with humans, it wouldn't surprise me the devil could do that with a snake. I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of occult activity, although I'm not an expert in the occult. I don't know that for sure. Now, note, I've assumed this serpent was literal. Some, however, say that the serpent is merely symbolical of temptation, but you read that, it doesn't sound like a symbol. It sounds like something that actually happened literally because it's a narrative. It's not poetry. It's not allegory. So the snake said to the woman, that's Eve, she was alone. How do we know that? Well, the serpent was able to reason with her. And I'm going to give you, when I get to Adam, I'm going to give you a bunch of other proofs that show that Adam was not there with her. Now, some say that Adam was amiss for leaving his wife unprotected. In fact, a lot of people say that. You're supposed to protect your wife. Where were you, Adam? Well, let me give a little defense of Adam. First of all, he was not aware of sin. He didn't realize that somebody would be tempting somebody to sin. There was no evil in the world. There were no bad guys. So if Eve is wandering around in the garden by herself, why would Adam worry about her? He was not aware of the devil. He had no idea that his wife would do something so stupid as to listen to the devil. Was Adam supposed to follow Eve around and be with her every second of the day? So I think people are just a little hard on Adam about that. Now note here that Eve, as she was being tempted, she had no flesh. She had no sin nature because she hadn't fallen. She had no flesh, that propensity to sin, that propensity to be seduced by sin. She had none of that in order to be tempted. She was a free moral agent. In other words, she could not be tempted from within, but she could be tempted from without. And unfortunately, she fell from that temptation. Now, this is what the serpent said to Eve. Did God really say you can't eat from any tree in the garden? Did God really do that? Now, what the devil is trying to do here is to show that God, in the devil's view, did not have Eve's interest at heart. And so he's trying to get her to rebel in her own self-interest. And it would be innocent to do that. Everybody looks out for themselves, Eve, so why don't you? Did Eve really say you couldn't? Did God really say that you couldn't eat all of the trees there? What's the matter with this God? Why is he restricting your freedom? And so, of course, what the devil is trying to do is to separate man from God, to alienate man from God, just like he did in Job chapter 1 and 2. What kind of a God would do this to you, Job? But ironically, our self-interest is to stay close to God as we can. And the devil's self-interest is to separate us from God just as much as he can. Now, we have a translation problem here. The devil says, did God really say you can't eat from any tree in the garden? Some versions have you can't eat from every tree in the garden. Makes a huge difference in interpretation. The KJV and the NASB margin has every. Did God say that you can't eat from every tree in the garden? Well, if every is the correct reading, then Satan is quoting God entirely accurately because God did tell Adam and Eve, you can't eat from every tree. You can eat from all of them but one, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, if that's the case, then Satan is appealing to God's alleged bad motives, not to the factuality of God's statement. The devil is not questioning that God actually said that. He's saying, look here, he said you can't eat from every tree, so therefore he doesn't have your best interest at heart. He's being stingy with you. Why is God so stingy as to not allow you to eat from every tree? Well, of course, that's absurd. He gave him a paradisical garden that they could eat, that they could live in. They could eat from every fruit that they wanted to. They had plenty to eat. It's not going to kill them not to eat from one tree. Well, that's if the word every is there. Did God not say you couldn't eat from every tree? But now if any is correct, did not God say to you that you can't eat from any tree? Well, now, if that's true, then Satan is twisting what God said, because God didn't say that. He didn't forbid them from eating from all the trees, saying that you could eat from any tree, saying that you cannot eat from any tree. You're forbidden to eat from any tree in the garden. That means there's not one tree in the garden you can eat from. God didn't say that. So if the devil is trying to tell Eve that that's what God said, then the devil is obviously twisting what God said, twisting it pretty bad. Now, I don't believe that that's really likely. It seems to me that Eve would have had enough sense to know this wasn't true. She was told she could eat any tree she wanted to except one, and now the devil's saying that God had told her, no, au contraire, you can't eat from any tree. There's not one tree you can eat from. That's too much of a difference to make me believe that Eve would even consider that as something that God had said. So I prefer every to be the correct translation. Did not God say that you can't eat from every tree? That way the devil's not misquoting God. He's questioning God's generosity and his motives and his love for Eve, trying to restrict her. You know, that's how kids think. Oh, you won't let me have the keys to the car just because I've been drinking every weekend. You put too many restrictions on me. You don't love me, that kind of thing. We go to Genesis 3, verse 2. The woman said to the serpent, we may eat the tree from the trees in the garden. So there you have it. She said, hey, either way, if the devil said you can't eat from any tree, factually misstating what God said, then Eve responds to that and said, no, you're wrong, devil. We may eat from the tree. So she just directly contradicts the devil. Or if the devil said you can't eat from every tree, and that shows that God is stingy, then Eve responds, look, we can eat from the trees in the garden, so God's not stingy. We got all these trees in the Garden of Eden we can eat. So she was resisting the devil's temptation very well at first. Now we go to Genesis chapter 3, verse 3. But about the fruit of the tree in the middle of the garden, God said, you must not eat it or touch it, or you will die. Now, some people say that Eve misquoted God, you must not eat it or touch it, because there's nothing in God's prohibition about not touching the fruit. He didn't say anything about that. He just said, don't eat it. It was okay to touch it, but you couldn't eat it. Now, the question is this an innocent misquotation by Eve? In my opinion, it was innocent. And John Gill agrees with me. Here's what he says, quote, neither shall ye touch it, which, though not expressed in the prohibition, is implied, namely, such a touching the fruit as to pluck it off the tree, take it in the hand, and put it to the mouth in order to eat it. In other words, when God said, don't eat the fruit, that's the same thing as saying, don't touch the fruit, because you can't eat the fruit without touching it. You have to touch it in order to eat it. So Eve is just giving an incidental detail about the act of eating that was prohibited. So I don't think she's guilty of anything here. Some people, like the NIV Study Bible, says that this was not an innocent misquotation. The NIV Study Bible says that this misquotation by Eve shows that the serpent's deceptions were slowly working their poison. I think the NIV Study Bible is wrong on that. Now, some people also accuse Eve of misquoting God when she says, you must not eat it or touch it, or you will die. They say that the Hebrew here, for the word that she used, can be translated, lest perhaps you will die. When God said, you will die, and Eve is saying, perhaps you will die. Well, that's a matter of linguistics in Hebrew, and I don't know Hebrew. John Gill refutes that idea. He says, no, the word used is not always used for doubting. It's not always used for perhaps. The word that Eve used could mean, you're going to die if you eat the fruit, which is exactly what God told her. So she's not guilty of misquoting. At least you can't prove that she's guilty of misquoting God there at all. So let's give Eve a break. I've heard this a lot. I don't think it's true. Genesis 3, 4. No, you will not die, the serpent said to the woman. Now, Satan is no longer very subtle. He's flat out calling God a liar. No, you will not die. But God in Genesis 2, 17, talking to Adam, says, you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for on the day you eat from it, you will certainly die. And the devil, quoting God, says, no, you will not die. Call God a liar. Now, there's another way that you could interpret this so that Satan is not calling God a liar. He could be appealing to the merciful nature of God. He's saying, no, you're not going to die. A merciful God wouldn't do that to you, Eve. You know he loves you. Go ahead and eat the fruit. He's not going to kill you. Or the devil could be arguing this way. Look, Eve, this is only a threat. He told you you would die if you eat that fruit, but he doesn't expect you to eat it. He's not really going to do it. It's just like the parent who threatens to spank his kid if the kid puts his hand in the cookie jar, but the parent never intends to do so. He's just trying to threaten the kid to keep him from doing something. God wouldn't actually kill you. He loves you, Eve. Well, those two are reasonable interpretations. I prefer to think, though, that the devil is just calling God a liar. You're not going to die. Genesis 3:5. The devil continues. The serpent continues. In fact, God knows that when you eat it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Now, what the devil is doing here is implying that God has selfish motives. He doesn't want Adam and Eve to know what God knows. In other words, God looks, according, and this is the devil's viewpoint, God looks at Adam and Eve and says, oh my goodness, we don't want them to eat that tree of knowledge of good and evil, because then they'll be wise like I am, like God is. And we don't want that, because we want God to be on top. God wants God to be on top, not his creatures. And if Adam and Eve get knowledge of good and evil, they can live apart from me. And I don't want that. John Gill and Adam Clark interpret it that way. Well, Satan is wrong about that. It's true that God knows that when Eve eats the apple, her eyes will be open and she will be like God, knowing good and evil. But there's a difference. God knows good and evil intellectually. He knows what it is, but he doesn't experience it. He doesn't participate in it. But when Eve eats the tree of the tree, fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, she actually participates in the evil. She doesn't just know it intellectually. She knows it experientially, and it rots her character and destroys her. So in Genesis 3:5, the devil is questioning God's motives, saying that God is worried about you becoming independent, knowing too much. He wants you to be tied to his apron strings. He wants to be your master. He wants you to be slaves. He wants you to be dumb and ignorant so he can take care of you. So he can dominate you and not treat you right. That's roughly what the devil's doing here. We have to distinguish knowing good and evil intellectually and experientially. Adam and Eve knew what evil was intellectually, because they were told not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So they knew that disobedience to God's commands was wrong, because God told them it was wrong. He said, you're going to die. But they did not know good and evil experientially because they hadn't sinned yet. Well, when the devil talks to Eve, he doesn't point Eve to the fact that she might know good and evil experientially, because he doesn't care about Eve. He wants her to know evil experientially. So he interprets knowing good and evil as intellectually. You're going to be wise like God, and you can be independent of God if you'll just eat the fruit. And that's just one example of how the devil twists things, actually twisting words there. Now, here's a little problem. The devil says you will be like God, knowing good and evil, if you eat that fruit. Well, here's the problem. If it is good for God to know good and evil, why is it bad for Adam and Eve to know good and evil? And again, the answer is, it's okay for God to know evil intellectually, but he will never know it experientially. God is protecting Adam and Eve from knowing evil experientially. He is not trying to protect them from knowing evil intellectually. They already know what evil is. They might have a shallow view of it, but they knew that they weren't supposed to disobey God. We go now to Genesis 3:6. Then the woman saw that the tree was good for food and delightful to look at, and that it was desirable for obtaining wisdom. So she took some of its fruit and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. Now, it has been noted by many commentators that what happens here is that Eve succumbed to three temptations. These three temptations are listed for us in 1 John 2:16. For everything that belongs to the world, the lust of the flesh, temptation number one, the lust of the eyes, temptation number two, and the pride in one's lifestyle, temptation number three. These temptations are not from the Father, but are from the world. So, when Eve saw that the tree was good for food, she was answering the lust of the flesh. When she saw the fruit was delightful to look at, she was following the lust of her eyes. And then when she saw that the fruit was desirable for obtaining wisdom, she was being tempted by the pride of one's life. Because if you're wise and smart, you're rich and powerful. Satan used all three of these forms of temptation on Jesus. The lust of the flesh, Luke 4:3. The devil said to him, "If you are the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread." Lust of the flesh, Jesus was hungry. This is the temptation in the wilderness. Lust of the eyes, Luke 4:5. So he, the devil, took Jesus up and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And so Jesus saw all these kingdoms he could be in charge of. That's lust of the eyes. Pride in one's lifestyle, Luke 4, verse 9. So he, the devil, took him to Jerusalem, had him stand on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down from here." In other words, I can be a big shot. I'm not going to die. Jameson Fawcett Brown has a good quotation about temptation. Quote, "The history of every temptation and of every sin is the same. The outward object of attraction, the inward commotion of mind, the increase and triumph of passionate desire, ending in the degradation, slavery, and ruin of the soul." And that's what happened to Eve when she ate it. Well, now she's fallen. She's not finished, though. She's got to get Adam involved, too. Sin loves company, like misery. So she gave the fruit to her husband. Now, there's some options as to what her motives were. Did she have motives of ill will? Did she know that she was going to die, and so she wanted Adam to die like she was going to die? Gosh, I hope not. A more charitable interpretation would be that she had motives of goodwill. She thought Adam was going to have his eyes opened, that he was going to be wise, have the knowledge of good and evil, becoming like God. So she thinks, oh, that'll be good for my husband too. So she gave the fruit to Adam. Whichever way it was, she suckered Adam. I'll never forget this guy who knew Max Lucado personally, the famous Christian writer, and he ended up in my apartment, the friend of Max Lucado. I forgot his name, but he ended up in my apartment at a church meeting I was having in Beijing, and he gave a talk, and he made the point that men will do just what Adam did. They will do anything to please their wives. And I never had thought about it before until he said that. And so that's why if a man marries a wife that is not interested in following God wholeheartedly with her whole heart, the man will compromise or will be tempted very strongly to compromise his desire to follow Jesus in order to please his wife. Happens all the time. Happened here with Adam. He didn't have to eat the doggone fruit. He could have said, "Now, you know, Eve, you really screwed up here." Now, it's an interesting speculation. What if he'd refused to eat the fruit? We know that Adam's sin is the one that counted because he was the head of the family, and Paul mentions him in Romans 5 as the one through whom original sin originated. It could have been, he could have stopped the whole thing right there. He says, "Okay, Eve, you ate it, but I'm not going to eat it. We're not going to fall." Just a minute ago, I said Eve had fallen by eating that fruit. I'm not so sure that's true because Adam hadn't eaten it yet. That's an interesting theological question, is it not? One I hadn't thought of. Now, Eve gave the fruit to Adam. The question arises now is, was Adam with her at the time of the serpent's temptation? Was he with her all the time? Now, if he were with Eve while the serpent is seducing her, that would make Adam very culpable. Why? Because he silently let his wife get steamrolled by the devil while he's just standing there watching and not saying a word. I don't believe that, though. I don't believe Adam was that crass. I believe that Eve got tempted, she ate the fruit, and then she takes the fruit to Adam, or Adam shows up later and they meet apart from the serpent. Here's arguments to show that. Argument number one. It's hard to believe that all that talk between Satan and Eve would go on with no input from Adam at all. Argument number two. Adam blamed Eve for his fall, not the serpent. In Genesis 3:12, we read this. The man replied, this is after God accused Adam of sinning. The man replied, "The woman you gave to be with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate." He doesn't even mention the serpent. It would have been logical. It would have been logical for him to blame the serpent if he had been there in the presence of the serpent when the temptation was going on. But he didn't do that. He blamed Eve. Argument number three, that Adam was not with Eve at the time of the serpent's temptation. God said that Adam had listened to his wife, not to the serpent, but to his wife. Genesis 3:17. And he, God, said to Adam, "Because you listened to your wife's voice and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, the ground is cursed because of you." You listen to your wife's voice, not to the serpent's voice, but to your wife's voice. That's an indication that Adam was alone with Eve when he got seduced into sin. Now, when Adam heard Eve speaking, he was hearing Eve's advocacy of the devil's position. She was saying, "Hey, eat this, Adam. You're going to be wise like God." You're going to know good and evil like God. Now, when Eve was first tempted, she wasn't advocating the devil's position. She was saying, hey, God told us we could eat every tree. Don't what you're saying, devil. Don't tell me that God's limited what I can eat here in the garden. I can eat all the trees. But we don't hear that. We just see Eve taking the fruit, giving it to Adam, say, hey, you could eat this and be wise like God, have knowledge of good and evil like God. I think that's very clear. Adam was not there at the first temptation of Eve with the serpent. And here's another good argument. Argument number four, saying that Eve was alone with the serpent when she was tempted. Paul said Eve was deceived, not Adam. If Adam had been there at the first temptation, Paul would have said Adam was deceived, not Eve, but he said Eve was deceived. Here are the scriptures, 2 Corinthians 11:3. But I, Paul, fear that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your minds may be seduced. As the serpent deceived Eve, not Adam. 1 Timothy 2:14, Paul says this, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived. Adam was not deceived because he wasn't there when the serpent was doing the deceiving. The woman was deceived. So I think we can clearly say that Eve was alone when she was seduced into sin. Now, there's another option. He could have been there with Eve while the snake was talking to her, but he could have been a little bit out of earshot and didn't hear what was going on. Well, I'm not going to consider that one. That's possible, but I don't think it advances the thought here any, because it's basically the same thing as saying he wasn't present because he didn't hear what the snake was saying. Now, let's look at Adam's motives for eating that fruit. John Gill says he didn't want Eve to die alone because he loved her so much. Now, that's one option that could have happened. Eve could have died after she ate the fruit and disobeyed against God, but the sin would not have been passed down to her children because original sin passes through the man and Adam would still be unfallen. That's an interesting speculative thought. So that might be why he ate the fruit. He says, oh, well, Eve's going to die. I'm going to die with her. Well, that's very poetic and noble. I think more likely, though, the reason he ate the fruit, he was persuaded by the serpent's arguments that Eve was giving him. He thought, oh, my eyes are going to be open. I'm going to see like God. That sounds fun. But at any rate, when Adam ate that fruit, it was at that point that mankind was doomed. Adam was the federal head. Responsibility was with him. John Gill says mankind would not have fallen upon Eve's eating. She would have died, but not the rest of the race. Well, that's what I was just saying a minute ago. I assume Gill is right about that. Again, that's speculation. I don't know exactly what would have happened, but it's reasonable to me. We turn now to Genesis 3, verse 7. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made loincloths for themselves. Now, the eyes of both of them were open. Here are two ways you can interpret that. Option number one, Eve's eyes were already opened after she ate, and so then the eyes of both of them were opened after Adam ate. But option number two is Eve's eyes were closed after she ate, and then they were opened up after Adam ate, and so her eyes weren't open until Adam ate. Doesn't say, I don't know. If her eyes were already opened, and she knew that she had sinned and that she was going to die and that she had rebelled against God, then it would be reprehensible for her to ask Adam to eat. I suspect that her eyes weren't opened, and then she didn't realize the enormity of what she had done until after Adam ate with her. Well, I'll leave that question open. The eyes that were open, could it be their physical eyes used metaphorically here so they could see each other's nakedness? Or it could just mean the eyes of their understanding, spoken metaphorically, because now they understood that they had been deceived by the serpent, they had broken the commandment of God, that God was angry with them, they had destroyed themselves, they had lost all their blessings and privileges, and that they and their offspring were all going to die. Hey, now they've got knowledge of good and evil. Now, when their eyes were opened, the first thing they saw was that they were both naked. Now, this has led to a great deal of speculation and controversy as to why their knowledge of sin would make them feel shame at being naked. John Gill says they probably experienced quote-unquote evil concupiscence for the first time. And my response to Mr. Gill is, well, how's that possible? They were married. They must have had concupiscence before they were married, and I don't know what the difference between concupiscence, which is holy, is different than concupiscence, which is evil, after the fall. In other words, before the fall, Adam and Eve are going to have sexual desire for each other. How do you distinguish that from sexual desire for each other after the fall? Because sexual desire for married people is perfectly holy and godly. So I have a problem with that. Well, let's look at five options as to why they felt no shame for nudity before the fall, but there was shame they felt after the fall. Okay, option number one is similar to what Gill said. Their pure sex drive was perverted to lust for the first time, and Gill's not the only person that says that. A lot of people say that. And as I just said, it's not sinful to lust after one's wife, so how could you distinguish the desire for each other before and after the fall? I can't make any distinction, so I don't see why Adam and Eve could either, so why they would all of a sudden say, oh my goodness, we're naked. And look at it this way, too. Today's husbands and wives aren't ashamed of each other naked post-fall. Isn't their sex drive perverted by the fall? Well, I assume it has been because we live subject to Adam's original sin after the fall of man. But men and women don't feel perverted when they have desire for each other sexually if they're married. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think that's going to answer the question that the pure sex drive was perverted into a evil, lustful sex drive after the fall. It's not going to work. So let's look at option number two. They weren't ashamed of each other, but they were ashamed of being seen naked by God, the angels, and the devil because of their sin. Well, I'm sure they were ashamed of being seen as sinners by God, angels, and the devil, but I don't know what naked's got to do with that. If they had sinned and kept their clothes on, wouldn't they still feel shame before God, the angels, and the devil? Even if they kept their clothes on or kept their clothes off or put their clothes on, what difference does it make whether they have clothes on or off? They're still going to feel shame. So that option, just to say that they were ashamed of being seen naked by God, it doesn't answer the question of why nakedness leads to shame. Option number three, and this is the one I prefer, they had lost the glory of their radiant, innocent bodies and were covering up the lost glory. They used to shine. They used to be effulgent. They used to be, if not glorified, because they could fall, but they were close to being glorified, let's put it that way. And then, when they sinned, they didn't look so hot anymore, and so they were ashamed of what had happened, and so they covered themselves up. That's option number three. Option number four, God was intending them to be clothed and to tell them that they were going to wear clothes, but the devil jumped the gun. In other words, Adam and Eve were like little kids who don't know that they're naked when they are naked, but the parents have to tell them at some point, hey, you don't go out in polite society with your clothes off, and God was going to tell Adam and Eve that personally later, but the devil jumped the gun on him. And again, you have to ask, well, why would God need to tell them that? Why couldn't they just be naked forever? Well, because this is my speculation. You could take that argument further and say that sooner or later there are going to be people on earth not married to Adam and Eve, and they might have sexual desire for somebody that's not their spouse. That's the only way I can save that option, and that's a stretch. So I really have a hard time believing that God intended them to be clothed and he just hadn't gotten around to tell them yet. To back that option, we can read Genesis 3:11. Then he, God, asked, who told you that you were naked? Did you eat from the tree? Who told you that you were naked? And so they're ashamed because they listened to somebody besides God who was supposed to instruct them on how not to be naked. I don't think that's going to do the job. Here's fifth option, how to explain this shame for nudity after the fall. This is John Gill's idea. Original sin was propagated through the sex organs, so Adam and Eve instinctually knew that their offspring would be sinful, and so they covered up their sex organs because that represented the future, the posterity. I don't know. It's a hard question. People have a lot of different answers on that. I report, you decide. For whatever reason that they felt shame for being nude, they tried to cover up their shame by sewing loincloths. The NIV Study Bible says this was a pitiful attempt to cover their shame because only God could cover their shame. Loincloths are not going to do the job. Now notice that only their genitals were covered with the loincloths, and that tends to support the idea that it was sin that's propagated through the sex organs, and that's why they felt shame about their sex organs. Or it tends to support the idea that they felt lust and they realized it was their sex organs that were causing lust, and so they covered it up. I'm not saying that option's wrong. I'm just saying I have a hard time believing it. Well, here's a quote from John Gill saying that their sin immediately affected their sexuality. Quote, the reason of which, perhaps, is because by those members the original corruption of human nature has been from the beginning and still is propagated from parents to children. That's what I said earlier, that John Gill thought that original sin being passed on down from generation to generation was what caused Adam and Eve to cover up the sex organs from shame. We go now to Genesis chapter 3, verse 8. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden at the time of the evening breeze, and they hid themselves from the Lord God among the trees of the garden. Now, first of all, God walking in a garden, you think, whoa, that sounds pretty impossible because God is a spirit. And then you think, well, maybe it's poetic. God's taking a walk in the garden, but he's there. But it doesn't sound poetic. It sounds like something actually happened because the man and the wife heard the sound of the God walking in the garden, that crunch, crunch, crunch. Doesn't sound poetic at all to me. And many people say that this is an epiphany, an appearance of Jesus, and that Jesus was walking in the garden in the form of a man. And I believe that's probably true. Adam and Eve hid when they heard Jesus walking through the garden, if it was Jesus. Once the garden had been a place of peace, joy, and fellowship, and now it was a place of terror, as the NIV Study Bible says. As the psalmist said in Psalm 139, verses 7 through 8, "Where can I go to escape your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there." And Adam and Eve were they're not going to escape God. They're not going to escape Jesus. The sound that they heard, here's three options as to what the sound was that they heard. Thunder is option number one. Psalm 29:3 says this, "The voice of the Lord is above the waters. The God of glory thunders, the Lord above vast waters." So here we have the voice of the Lord thundering. If we read it that way, then the man and his wife heard the thunder of the Lord God walking in the garden. Oh, I don't think that's what it is. John Gill says it's the voice of the Son, who appeared in a human form, that's what I just said, as a pledge of his incarnation. Jameson Fawcett Brown agrees with that, said, or at least mentions that that might be true, that God was walking in some visible form. So you heard a voice just like you would hear my voice, a human's voice. The third option for the sound of the voice is the audible voice of God, God just speaking through the wind current, through the air currents. But at any rate, they hid. Genesis 3, verse 9. "So the Lord God called out to the man and said to him, 'Where are you?'" Now, this is obviously a rhetorical question. Of course, God knew where Adam was. God did the same thing to Cain. Genesis 4, 9. "Then the Lord said to Cain, 'Where is your brother Abel?'" Of course, God knew where Abel was. The purpose of the question was designed to get Adam to face up to God and to confess what he had done. And you'll notice through here that, as far as I can tell, Adam never confessed his sin, nor did Eve. Now, notice that God didn't go looking for Eve first. He went looking for Adam first. Why? Because Adam was the man responsible. He was in charge of his family. He was the head of the family. Even though Eve initiated the sin, the buck stops with the man because he's in charge and he's responsible. And all these feminists who want to say, well, I want to have an equal marriage where everybody has an equal say, and the only time the husband votes is when there's a tie and this kind of thing. Typical Christian feminist nonsense. You want to have equal say in leading the family instead of supporting and serving your husband who leads the family? Well, then you're going to have to take responsibility, dear feminist wife, because with much authority comes much responsibility. The more authority you got, the more responsibility you got, and that's not pleasant when things go wrong. The big problem that married couples have is men do not like to take responsibility. They don't like to lead. They don't like the responsibility of it, the terror of it, the fear that something might go wrong. But men are supposed to. Well, at any rate, that's a digression here. God called out looking for Adam, not Eve. We go to verses 10 and 11. "And he," that's Adam, "said, 'I heard you, I, Adam, heard you, God, in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid.' Then he," God, "asked, 'Who told you that you were naked? Did you eat from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from?'" So Adam heard God in the garden, and that God's voice before was something that had given him pleasure because Adam and Eve were in perfect communion with God in that garden. And now he fears God. He's afraid of him. He said he was afraid because he was naked. Well, that's not a true reason. He was naked since the day he was created. He wasn't afraid of God. Naked is just another way of saying he was guilty and ashamed. The nakedness expressed that guilt and shame. And because he was guilty and shamed, he hid from God. And that's what we all do. We sin before God. We don't want to face him. I know somebody right now, Chinese Christian. She told me of a particular thing, and it was wrong. And I said, you need to go to God about that. She said, no, she hadn't done that yet. Wasn't planning to in the immediate future. I said, why? She said, because I like it. And I don't want to do it. I don't want to go to God about it. I was asking that God help her stop doing it. And she says, I don't want to go to God. Well, she's very honest. That's why I like this girl. But that just illustrates how we're afraid to go to God when we sin. But we got to remember now, Adam was not covered with the blood of Jesus at this time. And when we sin, we have a high priest who can go mediate for us in the throne room of God and can say, here's my blood. Dan Trotter's not guilty anymore. He's got something he wants to confess to you. And God says, fine, Dan, come on in. I'm not going to condemn you. Punishment's already been paid. So then I can go into the throne room and say, I'm sorry, God, I shouldn't have done what I did. I shouldn't have had this attitude, this thought. And you can just tell God about it and you don't need to be afraid. But Adam didn't have that luxury. He wasn't a Christian. And so he was afraid of God. Note that Adam still has not confessed his sin. I don't think he ever did. Maybe he did later and it's just not recorded. But you would think that if he'd have done something as important as confessing his sin, then Moses would have written it down. But it's not in here. Verse 11, then God asked, who told you that you were naked? This is another rhetorical question. Of course God knew who told Eve or who told Adam that he was naked. Notice that Adam immediately upon eating the fruit was afraid, was naked, ashamed, knew he was going to die. It all happened immediately after eating that fruit. And by the way, it wasn't an apple, it was fruit. It's another myth that artwork apparently has worked into our minds. An erroneous fact. Genesis chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. Then the man replied, that's Adam, the woman you gave to be with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate. He didn't confess the sin. He passed the buck. Hey, it wasn't me. It was Eve did it. She gave the fruit to me. And I, you know, it looked so good, I ate it. But, you know, it was really her fault. She gave it to me. Verse 13, so the Lord God asked the woman, what is this you have done? And the woman said, it was a serpent. He deceived me and I ate. No, it was not my fault I ate that fruit, even though it looked so good. And I was so hungry and it was so shiny. Nope. The devil made me do it. That's basically what she's saying. Now, Adam was cowardly. He was in charge of Eve. He should have manned up. He should have said, I was responsible for Eve. I somehow let her get out of my care. I might have had excuses for letting her get out of my care, but she did. And as a result, we screwed up. And in fact, even if you can't blame Adam for letting Eve be seduced by the serpent because he didn't expect something like that, when Eve brought that fruit to Adam, then Adam was totally responsible. He could have said, no, I'm not going to eat it. That violates God's prohibition against eating the fruit. He was in charge of Eve. He should have said, don't put the blame on Eve. Put it on me, God. I was the one that, listen, she was deceived, but I voluntarily took it. I'm so sorry. No, he didn't do that. And notice what else Adam does. He says, the woman you gave me. Now, it could be just that you gave me as an incidental detail, but it could be the woman you gave me. In other words, if you hadn't given me this temptress, I wouldn't have succumbed to her smooth words. So it's your fault, God. I'm not sure that's true, that Adam was really blaming God, but it could be interpreted to be that way. At any rate, this was not Adam's finest hour. Now in verse 13, when God asked the woman, what is this you have done? That's another rhetorical question. God knew what Eve had done, but he wants to get her to confess, which she didn't do. They sinned, boy. What is this you've done? It wasn't just eating fruit, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown point out. It's a lot worse than just eating fruit. Quote, this sin of the first pair was heinous and aggravated. It was not simply eating an apple, but a love of self, dishonor to God, ingratitude to a benefactor, disobedience to the best of masters, a preference of the creature to the creator. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished chapter 3 of Genesis, verses 1 through 13. In our next audio, I will cover verses 14 through 24, and we will look at God's curses on Adam, Eve, and the serpent because of their sin. Hope to see you next time. Hope you enjoyed this audio.